Hey everyone, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9, coming at you here from the very center of the universe, and that of course is Clear Creek County, Colorado, up in the loft of the United Center in the K-Goat Studios, and this is Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole, and with me today is poet Sandra S. McRae, and Sandra writes about nature and domestic complexities, the political and the divine, food and hunger of all kinds. Her books include a full-length poetry collection, All the Way to Just About There, which is with Future Cycle Press, a prose poem collection, The Magic Rectangle with Folded Word, and best-selling cookbook, Weber's Big Book of Grilling, that's with Chronicle. Sandra's poetry has appeared in numerous journals and anthologies, and she has been nominated for a Pushcart Prize. She lives in the mountains and teaches creative writing, literature, and composition at Red Rocks Community College near Denver, Colorado. Well, Sandra, welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. And I am so looking forward to this conversation. I rarely get to interview poets.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
We need to do more of that.
Yeah, exactly. We do. I need to do more there. But and I'm always fascinated with poetry. I used to teach English, as
yes,
you do.
That's right. Yes.
And I found that poetry was the more difficult aspects of teaching for me. You seem to come by it naturally, I would think. Why is that? Now, you know, let's talk about that. What is poetry? And, you know, why it flows for some and not for others?
I think that's a great question. You know, I think the main obstacle to people really embracing poetry is that a lot of people come at it from the question of what does poetry want from me? Because people think it's a demanding genre to read. It has similes and metaphors and figurative language, and it's not prosy. It doesn't always explain itself very clearly. You have to kind of work at it, bring a little something to the table. And I think people think, what does poetry want from me? I think that's a wrong question. I think people should approach poetry asking, what does poetry want to give me? Because I think poetry brings gifts of attention and focus and insight. And I would even say hope and inspiration. And so I think if we flip that question to what is in poetry for me, I think we'll find that it's a much more approachable genre. Because poetry wants to bring you beauty and perspective and insight. And it'll poke you and challenge you a little bit. But I think it's really there to help you become more human.
I wonder if it's also that in our culture, in this particularly technocratic, industrialized culture, that we tend to, you know, like in teaching, oftentimes you go into schools and we see rows and kids sitting in rows and linear thinking, mm-hmm. whereas poetry kind of demands you to step away from the A to B to C, and you end up over there with Z, and you have to step out of yourself, and that's sometimes unnerving.
I think it's right. And I think poetry skips around a lot, and poetry can take you all the way around the world in a matter of a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the fun of it, but it's sort of like getting on a train. You don't know where it's going. You should be a little hesitant, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that the linear thinking, it's more of a matrix sometimes, more of a network of thought that kind of helps build a three-dimensional picture more than, let's say, you know, academic writing or news writing. Some of those writings are very poetic in their own right, but I think poetry invites you to sort of step into another dimension. And I think for young people, that's really exhilarating and also mm-hmm. scary. So mm-hmm. I think if you don't start teaching kids to like poetry when they're very young, mm-hmm. They will, for some reason, they fall off the wagon. Like we start with Dr. Seuss and... Mm-hmm. And rhyming books and nursery rhymes. And some of the nursery rhymes are creepy and weird because they were written in different centuries where death was a little bit more neighborly. But I think that if we we shouldn't let kids fall out of love with poetry, because there's some life-saving messages in poetry that can really help students through, like, their academic year or their adolescent years.
Yeah.
There's a lot of beauty there.
There is. And without going down the pedagogical rabbit hole,
right. But
what you're saying here, Sandra, resonates with me in this regard that, you know, by the third and fifth grade, sometimes we have stomped creativity out of kids.
Yeah.
You know, that they have to take tests and stuff like that. And so in a way, maybe there's a subtle message that poetry is this other form of communication or literature that, you know, and we become uncomfortable with it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Maybe the teachers are uncomfortable with it. They should keep reading it too, you know?
Yeah.
But I think you mentioned something about the technocratic society, and I think technology has done a lot to bring poetry back to the forefront. I think you can access a lot more poetry online. You see poets reading their poems in videos. You can hear the poets read their own work, which I think sometimes is really illuminating, sometimes disappointing. I think not just because you write well on the page doesn't mean you perform well on the stage. There's a gap sometimes, but and other people can take someone's poem and make a video or a performance out of it that I think you can get a lot more out of it that way. So technology, I think, is kind of cracking the door on poetry too. And people posting poems online as soon as they write them, which I really think you need to let them ripen for a little bit. But, you know.
Why is that?
Now we're going to get into it. I just think that revision is an important part of the process. I think that you don't always, you know what you want to say, but you don't always find the right words until you work it a little bit.
And I think that might be another element bringing that up. Because when I write, because I write obviously in prose, mm-hmm. and I can go back and rework it and fine tune it and get the idea, I want to get it right to the point,
right.
whether I'm writing something, you know, a column for the newspaper or a work of fiction. And poetry doesn't seem to have certain, I don't know,
boundaries,
exactly, you know, like safeguards and everything too, you know, here's structure and everything. And you tend to be like, and it reminds me in a way when people talk about jazz, and there's always, you know, it's good jazz. Well, then what's bad jazz, you know? So good poetry, bad poetry. And, you know, I don't know. My left brain doesn't really, what tells me something is really good. When I'm reading your poems, I'm going like, oh my gosh, I'm just going down the line. Seriously,
Thank you.
On that, we'll come back to that. But it is something within our brain structure here in this society, at least in mine or my experience with other people.
Well, I think that people think that poets just sit down and write a poem, and they don't realize that we study poetry. Like, we read other poets all the time, and we study our own craft, and we, you know, I think engaged poets take workshops or give workshops, and whether you're teaching or learning in a classroom, you're always learning from either your students or from your teacher, and I think people forget that serious poets are engaged with the craft,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they're engaged with reading what other people are doing. I mean, we spend all of our money on books. I mean, it's pathetic how much money I've spent on poetry, but I like to support other writers. I think people also think that poetry is just free self-expression.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I think it starts that way as an impulse that you have something inside that needs to come out and you write it. But I think what happens in the end result is after you work a poem and then you let it out into the world, what started out as your own self-expression, you're actually putting into words what other people feel that they did not have the words to express. And so you actually are opening that mm-hmm. expression for other people to use and for other people to say, yeah, that's what it's like to be me.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And what is it, you know, that gets in, as I was reading one review, and maybe we could read it later about your work there, all the way to just about there. And the reviewer compared you favorably to Walt Whitman.
That was very flattering.
Yeah. And it just hit me too, because he is one, because when I would teach particularly the Romantics and the Transcendentalist period, and I could read Whitman, and it's something in his poetry just spoke to me. It speaks to me, and I don't want to put it in the past tense. You know, whether it's Leaves of Grass or, you know, I Saw My Barbaric Yelp or whatever it is, it was just like music. It's harmony. And it's just like, I don't know, it was right there with Walt, right. You know.
Over time, over geography and time and different cultures, you find yourself connecting with another human soul.
Yeah.
And I think that's really where the craft comes in. Like, you have to lay it down in a way that other people can pick it up. And some will and some won't, but when that connection happens, it's like a little, I don't know, metaphysical lightning that happens, felt it.
Yeah. You know, and I think one of your poems, and and I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it was about perhaps like growing up in a small town, whatever, and where I come from.
Yeah.
And even though you write that from your personal experience, as I'm reading it, I am recalling my childhood and where I came from.
Yes, isn't that beautiful? I have to give credit to F. Isabel Comfoy, who wrote the original Exercise. I actually I spend my summers at the Denver Writing Project, which is on the CU campus in Denver, or the Auraria campus, I should say. And we did this exercise that was written by a writing teacher, and She wrote about her childhood. She had certain criteria that you were supposed to put into the poem. Any language that was spoken, any foods that you remembered, any kind of details about what it was like to be a kid in your neighborhood. And after I read, I think she was our mentor text. I think the instructor read her poem and then gave us this criteria, and I just took off with it. And nice. What I love about that exercise is that people have told me when they hear this story, they think of their own childhood. And that to me is like the magic of poetry.
And that's what it's supposed to do, I guess, too. Yeah. You're right, because you then move while I'm with you or Walt, whoever I'm reading, Frost, I'm now putting it in my own life context, if you will.
Right. You internalize it.
And
you take it and make it your own. And that's the great thing about poetry. Like, once you put a poem out in the world, it's like when your kids graduate from high school or college, you're like, well, I did my best. Go have your life and stay in touch. Yeah. And your poems go out in the world and they make their own friends and they cause their own trouble sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you just get to watch it. And I think that's kind of cool. I was telling a student of mine the other day that when I got my manuscript back from the publisher as it was in layout, I read all the poems again and I'm like, oh my God, I don't like any of these. I was so disappointed. I'm like, why do they feel so weird and strange to me? Like, and then I realized, oh, because they're not mine anymore.
They
belong to the world now. And so I had to keep sort of this polite distance, and I keep trying to reconnect with them. Like, remember when I made you all those cookies and we sat on the couch and drank tea? And they're like, I'm off doing my own thing, Mom. Should I read that poem?
Yes. And I just remind you, go ahead and open up there. And I want to remind our listening audience, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9. This is Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole, and visiting here with poet Sandra S. McRae, who's going to do a reading.
So this is a poem from my book, All the Way to Just About There, which, by the way, is sort of the story of my life, unfinished business. And this poem is called Where I Come From, after F. Isabel Comfoy. I come from a fledgling suburb in a state that lost its mind with beauty and had to cope by building tract homes and strip malls. Where I come from, everyone calls out to friends from patios studded with braziers, across yards littered with bicycles, sandboxes, and panting mutts. Cookouts there are a seasonal language, but by July, everyone is fluent in potato salad. I come from slopes of purple-flecked bindweed and drainage ditches where we scour for crawdads hiding in the shade of scraggly Russian olives. We sneeze until October. I come from a living room framed by a jumble of scratchy couches. The green one hides a sofa bed because it is good to have space for visitors. Relatives arrive with train cases and presents, speaking Italian loudly. They do yoga right there in the front room until we drag them into the kitchen for honey buns and card games. They dole out dollar bills from leather coin purses that look like the money pouches carried in fairy tales. Where I come from, kids shoot out back doors like rockets and race to the park. The hot metal bars of the jungle gym sear our palms until we give up and run for ices at the 7-Eleven. Domes of cherry sweetness tower over the curled edges of the waxed paper cups, and drops of condensation slide down the sides, cooling our blisters. We only stop talking when a frosty gulp gives us a friendly punch in the throat, as if to say, "You're all right, kid." Where I come from, the evenings are perfumed with anise as steam rises from the pizzelle iron or cimello bakes in the oven. On the stove, salted water simmers a warm welcome to homemade ravioli that slide gently into its open arms. Their love is consummated in sugo alla napoletano. Where I come from, bath time is a necessary evil, but we strip and slip into the hot water anyway. It stings the raw spot between our toes, where the rubber thongs of flip-flops are doing their best to toughen us for the long haul. There are band-aids and sunburns in our future, but first, clean jammies, cool sheets, and sweet dreams of where we're going.
I'm with you. I'm hearing every metaphor. I love where people are fluid in potato salad, how you bring potato salad in language. It's just that connection, right? This is what we do, right?
But you know that feeling in July when everyone's fluid in potato salad.
Yeah, you don't think of it that way. This is a manner of speech, but that's right. What it is. We talk that. And my own images of the summer, you know, like when we were little kids and we would get popsicles.
Yes.
And they were joined together and you had to split them. So you had to share one with your sibling. You didn't really want to. And, you know, because she wanted orange and I wanted, you know, grape or something.
Right, right.
But all those memories, they just flood back. You know, listen, where does this come from for you when you start writing? Is it just something that just resonates? You talked about that experience where, you know, and she had given you. Was it Isabel?
Isabel. Yeah. Well, the instructor used her lesson.
And that kind of forms the seeds with the others as well. There's another one in there on stories, et cetera. But go ahead.
Well, Jerry, it's magic. It's magic. I can't say where it comes from. That's the magic of poetry. It wells up from inside you. I think there's some of us walk around with a thorn in our heart, maybe, that maybe a lot of them. And if you move a certain way and you feel that little poke, and you're like, oh, that's right. That's still in there. And you have to work it out, maybe with a pen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I think it's important to be porous to the world, to have a certain listening ear or open eyes. I certainly feel like learning two other languages helped make me more attuned to the subtleties of some metaphors and the music of language.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're learning how to pronounce your thoughts in someone else's language, it puts a wonderful strain on you, and you hear how other people talk and their perspective in the world, and you just become a better listener, I think. And I think that to be porous to the world means to let all that sensory detail or sensory stimulus come into you, into your heart, into your body, into your mind, and you just let it resonate there. You don't try to manipulate it too much. You just let it sit there, and it will tell you what it wants you to say in response.
I love the way you started right off with that, Sandra. It's magic.
It is magic.
And I was preparing for this. I got up super early this morning, and I went and I started, you know, go back through your some of your poems. And I remember emailing you and just saying, a wondrous way to start the day.
Oh, thank you.
and I thought, What a great title for a work. So yes. It's yours if you want it.
No, you should write that one.
But it's just, you know, because it's super, and you know, it's dark and I'm looking out at the stars and, you know, and I'm just reading this and I went, oh my gosh, what a wondrous way to start the day. And I mean, it just kind of flowed. You got alliteration, consonants there and rhyming.
Yes. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, that poetry wants to give you so much. Poetry wants your joy. Poetry wants you to see the beauty in the world. I think poetry wants you to know that when you feel like you're on that knife's edge of emotion, that you're not alone. That there are other people who have been there too, and they had words for it. So here, please take them if they'll help you. I think poetry is very generous that way.
Oh my gosh, yeah, to dig into it. Now, when you write, because you know, like you say, it's magic. Are there certain themes, though, that seem to just come through for you in your writing, or in your poetry when you're writing it?
Yes, I think there's a certain, I think every poet has what the Germans call a Weltanschauung, the way you view the world, your worldview. And I think I was blessed to be pretty much an optimist. And I think that, I can't take credit for it because it's just the way I came out, right? But I think that I pick up on hope and redemption a lot. And I try to put a lot of that in my poetry. And I think to a more recent theme for me is vulnerability, like trying to be more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I write in my poem stories, we tend to always want to be the hero. And so I wrote this poem about people always presenting themselves as heroes. And I thought, well, you should try that shoe on, see if it fits. And unfortunately it did, of course, we're not surprised. But I tried to write more poems where I'm more vulnerable, where I don't come out looking so great. And it was very freeing to just say, yeah, I've been a mess before, you know.
Yeah. Is that the poem Stories?
Stories, yes. Would you like me to read it?
I would, yes, because that one, as a writer, spoke to me. And so let's go ahead. Yeah, you have it there. You can dig it up.
Okay, and then in the end, I'm glad you picked up on it as a writer, that this is what writing kind of demands of us.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead and read it, and then we're going to take a break because I got some questions on that. It's great. Go
okay,
for it.
Cool. This is called Stories. In our stories, we're always the heroes, slaying our attackers with a perfect retort, flipping off the evildoers, bombing the insurgents to rubble. We practically dash into burning buildings to rescue the baby in the nick of time. We're always the life of the party, the smooth operator, the high adventurer, maybe a naughty bandito. In our youth, we were the sly graffiti artist, rowdy liquor lord, slippery sex god. And way back when, radiant fashion queen, playground Olympian. And then there was a time we got lost in Paris, Budapest, Mexico City, took the wrong bus and found not only Shangri-La, but El Dorado too, and lived to tell about it. Here, check out this artifact. We outfoxed the hustler in the village bazaar. Oh, we had that car salesman backpedaling. And that claims adjuster caught him in a lie and won the lawsuit. Yippee-ki-yay-yay. So what? I want the stories of the time you knew but didn't tell because you relished the power of a secret. How you stuck to your story and someone who really couldn't afford to took the fall. The time you beat up the skinny kid, left him crying in the dirt when you told that bitch where she could stick it because her fierceness scared you. Let's hear about the time you lifted some bills from the petty cash, left the scene of the accident because you were fucked up and besides, no one saw. Or that friend you flailed in a drunken rage. You were such an ass, but didn't care, didn't stop. How years later you read in the paper of her death by a swift-moving cancer. Tell me up close about the bedroom betrayal, how surprisingly easy it was to live with. The child you screamed at and maybe even shook. How about that daddy complex? Spill your shabbiest moments, your twisted fetish, your covetous hollow, all the tears you ever caused. Those stories. I want those.
Oh, okay. We're going to be right back. I'll take a break here. This is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9. This is Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole, visiting here with poet Sandra McRae, and she just read stories. So much to unpack in there. We'll be right back. All right. Hey, everyone. This is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9. Still coming at you here from the center of the universe, up in the loft of the United Center, the K-Goat Studio. Writer's Talk here, visiting here with Sandra McRae. And Sandra, I've read this poem a couple times. You reading it was even more impactful.
Thank you.
And I think what I read it, or when I listen to it, I read it and hear it and feel it through the lens of a writer.
Yes, right.
And I'm a big fan, for example, of Joseph Campbell, who writes about the hero's journey. So the hero, you know, nobility, you know, doing everything. But as a writer, and especially if you're writing on a personal level, it's really risky to write about stuff that you're not exactly proud of.
That's very risky. It's painful, you know. And but we were talking earlier about how we tend to project our heroism. But as a fiction writer, you know that the completely heroic hero is a terrible story. They never do anything wrong. They never take a misstep. It's not even archetypal, because right. The hero's journey has the flaw written into the hero. The hero has to wrestle with their limits or their shortcomings, and they have to ask for help. The hero needs to have a mentor and a trainer and someone who will maybe knock them upside the head to teach them about their ego and to prepare them for the enemy who's going to really test them. And I think that we tend to gloss over the fullness and full dimension of the hero. And so I wrote this poem because I was thinking about that. And I thought, well, are you practicing what you preach? So like I said, you know, it's risky as a writer to write those poems or stories, but it's freeing. It's very freeing.
Yeah, and risky is a good way, because when you, any type of writing, just in the fact that you wrote something and you put it out there, you're setting yourself up for criticism.
Right.
And if it's good, most times it's positive, mm-hmm. but every once in a while, you're also going to get, you know, a negative.
Zinger.
Yeah, a little good thing there on Amazon or something, you know. But that comes with the trade, and you go like, okay, and you know, let it roll off your back there. But the more personal that you write, and it seems to me that poetry is far more personal than someone who's writing, let's say, a murder mystery or science fiction or something like that, because it can create these characters, they're out there.
Right.
It's tough to write poetry, it seems to be, about this other, that it tends to be more in the, like I say, personal here, and therefore it compounds the risk that's going out there.
Yeah. I think you were mentioning Whitman earlier, and I think he was very vulnerable in his writing, but he was constantly revising his poetry up until he died, constantly putting out new editions. And I think that that just shows how, as you evolve as a human, you revise your own story and you revise your own words to try to get closer to the truth. And I think that's why revision is important before you publish.
Yeah.
But it's an occupational hazard. I mean, police officers go out and get shot at and deal with really bad actors. So and firefighters run into burning buildings, literally. So doctors show up and risk getting an infectious disease or getting hurt by someone they're trying to help. So who's to say we should have it any easier? How many vets have gotten bitten by their patients, you know? It's like, it's okay. It's part of the job.
Well, and, you know, just using Whitman very quickly again, is because his it seems like there was a separation in his poetry pre-Civil War and post-Civil War. You know, when the war comes, and he saw the horrors of the war, because I believe he was a nurse in the hospital, yes. And he witnessed this here, you know, men having their legs amputated and so on.
No anesthesia.
And that trauma. And then I think of today, you know, we get these soldiers coming back from the war front with PTSD. And even people in society today who go through trauma and so on. And that woundedness that's in there. But to write about that, get it out there. That's really risky.
There should be maybe a Purple Heart for that. I think that if we can write about our own pain, it makes us better witnesses to other people's pain, which I think is ultimately the goal, at least in my poetry, to be a witness to other people's losses and trauma. And joys. I don't want to forget joy. Right. I don't want people to think poetry is all about the dark side of the human experience, because it's all of it, right? It's the euphoria, too, and the blessings. And to be a witness to a blessing is an important thing. I mean, when we have babies, we have people come over and meet the new baby, and we have weddings, and we have funerals, or we talk about the good old days. And I think that it's important to witness to the whole dimension of human experience.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like Edgar Allan Poe, you know, the Raven, but that he also wrote Annabelle Lee.
Yeah.
You know, of course, he's, I think, if I'm pining there near her catacomb or something, I can't remember exactly, but that it is there. But I was struck also, and I was reading one of the reviews of your work there, and Joseph Hutchinson, who was the Colorado Poet Laureate for a number of years, and he writes in there about your poetry is for thinking and feeling human beings who are hungry for poems that speak to the core of their lives. And that's where I think it just resonated with me, because when we were you were reading before about, you know, the going back to your childhood days and growing up and everything, where I come from, and you immediately took me back or to happy times.
And isn't that really the great gift of poetry? Because it shouldn't be about the poet. It should be about the reader. And I think that the reader should get the joy or the emotion out of it. You know, in a lot of ways, your best poems, you feel like you don't write them so much as channel them. You're just a conduit to help people get back to their core of who they really are. And sometimes it's the core of what makes them happy, or the core of how they were formed as a human, and how their life experience has shaped them, and what's your next step going to be?
Yeah.
What are you going to do next, Jerry?
I don't know. It's pretty risky. Do I want to become a poet? I've never written poetry. And I think
you have. When you were a kid, you did it all the time.
I did.
Because you just observed the world, and you saw it the way you saw it, and you said it the way you saw it, and that was the poetry.
And I would go back to that just very quickly, the concept of risk, because as a prose writer, I have far more control over it, because I'm a critic too, and I can go back to my own writing and straighten out some stuff. And when I hear from my editor, like, okay, this needs to be, I get it. Poetry, though, I'm going like into this whole new universe where there's, like we were saying, no guardrails or anything.
That's a good way to put it. I think a lot of times you're feeling your way along the cave walls in the dark going, I hope I don't trip over a big rock.
Or fall down the abyss that goes out the back door of Plato's cave there.
And I think that's part of the reason why you need to share your poems, too. Because, I mean, I don't know any good poets who don't share their poems with other poets in writing groups. And, I mean, you don't have to, but I think it's a good practice, because if you have good friends, they'll tell you when you stub your toe or you lost them. And sometimes you have to say, okay, thanks for your input, and do it anyway, because you just have an inner thing that says this is the right thing. Maybe not for you as a reader, but for someone else out there.
Yeah. And you mentioned, I want to go back to one other point too, Sandra, and that poetry, and your poems are, you know, uplifting. They're, you know, like you say, you hope and redemption, you know, and, you know, that how people can overcome and just find joy in life and so forth. And so they're not necessarily, poetry is not about dark side, although it couldn't go there, like you point out there with the, in that poem, Stories. But you mentioned humor. And have you written anything that's...
Yeah, I try to put humor in, and well, I don't try to put humor. Some of my poems just come out funny. I think humor is an important part of poetry, and I think that I don't want people to think that poetry is always serious and heavy. Sometimes it's just goofy, and I think a part of the process is letting go and letting the poem take over. Mm-hmm. And one poem that comes to mind is a poem I wrote. It's kind of about living up here in the mountains. But it goes really wild really quickly. And I just let the poem take me for a ride. And that was really fun. It was a fun poem. And I could read it if you want.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. This is called...
I'm enthralled. I'm just...
Thank you. I think people who live in Clear Creek County and Evergreen area, Idaho Springs, Dumont Empire, I think they can relate to this poem because we have... close encounters with wildlife all the time. And we have a responsibility for how we encounter them. Like, don't put your trash out the night before, please, people. You'll get a bear killed. But this poem was about coyotes. It's called Coyote Apocalypse. When the coyotes first showed up, it never crossed our minds they would figure out the code for the garage door opener. We came home one afternoon to tennis rackets in the driveway, jumbled rakes and overturned trash cans. Such a mess. Then the one time we left the back door unlocked, well, you guessed it, muddy paw prints all over the couch, Cheetos and Cocoa Puffs crushed in the carpet, the TV blaring Fox News. They swiped the spare key hanging by the front door, the one attached to the bear whistle. Little shits. Then we never knew what to expect. A splat of barbecue sauce on the floor, a pile of scat in the corner of the den. Heaven forbid we should leave a chicken defrosting on the counter. They got bolder. When I came home to a fur-lined bathtub and the bed a holy mess, I called the sheriff. I've got coyote problems of my own, he growled. They had stolen his gun collection, drunk all his beer. That's the commissioner on the other line, he said, and hung up. I stood in the kitchen littered with bunny bits and gnawed deer legs. Unacceptable. On the neighborhood website, a lady shrieked, "Whatever will we do with these predators in our midst?" I knew. Went to the city. Bought a pair of lions. Cost me a side of beef a week, but we don't have a coyote problem anymore. Still, when those lion cubs are born, I don't care how cute they are. I'm not letting them in the house, even if it's snowing. I've learned my lesson.
Oh, I love it. It's a lighthearted way of looking at life up here. You write a lot about Colorado in your works. I find it, you know, that one, you know, yes. It was like a theme there.
Well, I live here and I observe it and I walk in it every day. Walk a few miles every day up over on Floyd Hill and environs and, you know, I write what I know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Colorado in my poem. I have one chapter in all the way to just about there that's called Carpe Tempestas, which means seize the season instead of Carpe Diem.
Right.
And it's a series of poems, that one for each month of the year. And it was took me about 2 or 3 years to write it because, you know, you have to go through a couple of Februaries before you know exactly what parts of February you want to pick out. And then consequently chuck, because February is really a nasty month up here. I have a lot of the landscape, a lot of the weather patterns and, you know, the weather up here. I love living in the mountains because, you know, living up here, like there's not a lot between you and the weather most days.
Right.
And that's why we do it, because it makes you feel more alive. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah, whether you're out, whatever you're doing, you could be shoveling snow or, you know, whatever
basking
it is out
there. Basking in the sun, basking watching the aspens, or listening to the rattling of the leaves.
And, yeah, you know, playing a game with Bambi there, you know, I see all my flowers and then the little chipmunks, you know, I guess I want to come out and eat the,
you know the drill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can write stories on those too. That's hilarious. Okay, so now you're a teacher and when you're working with your students, How do you help them let go of the barriers, just be free? So they could just get their stuff out there. What is there any particular techniques, or you just say, knock yourselves out, go at it big,
So you kind of want to work the control and the release pedals like you do in a car, the brake and the gas. And so sometimes you just, you give them space to write the poem that they think they want to write, they need to write. But I think that you also can work a lot with writing prompts because, well, I'm a fan of writing prompts because they usually knock something out of some dusty corner that I didn't know was waiting for me to come along with my pen and sweep it out. So you can give them some construct, some structure. I think young writers or beginning writers, or I should say developing writers, tend to be more impulsive, and they are really not clear about how revision works, and teaching revision is sort of an exercise in itself. But I think that you can give them writing prompts, or you can tell them. The bigger problem is really that young beginning writers want to express themselves, and that's it. They don't want to do the hard work to make sure anyone can understand what the heck they said. You know this from being a teacher, right?
Yeah, right.
So the hard part is to get them to take a critical eye to their own work without feeling defensive, but to help them dig out the stuff that's maybe not on the page yet, but that's still inside them, and help them pull that forward. And to also, there's also the leap of, from prose to poetry, to get them to quit over-explaining and to go with the economy of poetic language. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
How you don't need to write like you're telling a story. You can use imagery. You can tell a story, but you intensify the imagery. You squeeze out all the extra words, So that's some of the exercises that we work in.
Yeah, just your line there about being fluent in potato salad.
Right.
Boom, got it, right.
Boom,
there.
You got it, you know what that means.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, just a couple, three words there, fluent in potato salad, boom. We all get it, like this. And what a magical way to take someone right there, because you could smell the mayo and the mustard and the eggs and everything else you're putting in there too.
Right. I think people think that poets just walk around waiting for inspiration and then they slip into a cafe and poof, out comes this poem, and it's like,
no. You mean it doesn't work that way?
How dare you, know? We're athletes, right? As writers, it's our sport. We train, we practice, we do drills. Sometimes you sit down and you think, okay, I need to write today because I got a deadline. Your editor's wanting you to revise something. And you just sit down and you're like, I think I'm just going to write a page of, I don't know.
Okay. All right. I'm getting scared here because a little worried because you're taking me down a rabbit hole that I don't want to go into.
Just take a pen. You can dig your way out.
Or use the keyboard and then delete, whatever. No, that's fine. Well, we're almost to the end here, but you do readings also. And where are opportunities for people? Like if I wanted to just write, and I don't necessarily hang out with poets necessarily. I'm sure there are some in my life, but if I wanted to just go somewhere where you feel safe and welcome to just kind of listen to others and then maybe trot your stuff out there a little bit.
Yeah. I'm so glad you asked that. I would like to share with your listeners two venues, two opportunities. One is I teach at Red Rocks Community College, where we teach creative writing courses. And of course, we teach semester-long courses, which doesn't necessarily dovetail into people's lifestyles if they're not full-time students. So we started a short series of poetry and other writing workshops. And we offer two per semester, so four per school year. And you can go to rrcc.edu/English. And on our English homepage at the Red Rocks website, there's a button that says Community Creative Writing Workshops. And if you click on that, you can see that we'll have a workshop for poetry writing and revision in February. And I'm co-teaching that with a colleague who's also an excellent poet, Paul Gallagher. And we also have a submitting workshop in, I think it's April, with Amy Braziller, another colleague. And we're going to teach people how to submit their poetry to different writing journals and magazines. So there's a couple of opportunities there to take like a 3-hour class for $25. I mean,
They're cheap.
You cannot get any cheaper than that. There's other writing workshops, that Lighthouse Writers Workshop down in Denver on 15th and Race. They have a huge school there. I mean, they have amazing programming. So there's a Lighthouse Writers Workshop. I think a really great way for fledgling poets to kind of get their sea legs, or maybe there's really accomplished poets out there who've been working their craft for years and they just want to be heard. We have a writing series right in Evergreen called the Mad Blood Final Fridays. And Final Fridays is at the United Methodist Church on the last Friday of the month from 7 to 9 p.m. And you'll want to Google it because it's hard to see in the dark. But but everyone is welcome. And we always have the first hour is featured writers. And the second hour is open mic. And anyone and everyone is welcome to come read their poetry. We've sometimes had nonfiction writers read and even fiction writers. We primarily focus on poetry. But that's every final Friday. We don't meet in December for obvious reasons. It's the holidays. But this November 29th, which is this Friday, we'll have 2 hours of nothing but open mic. So if you're out there and you're shy and you're thinking, I don't know if I can do this, come on and tell me your name and I'll give you a hug and I'll make sure you can handle it.
Nothing else. Just show up and just observe.
Yeah.
And just kind of ease into it so that,
I mean, there's lots of people in the mountain area who are poets, and I'm really always surprised at how many there are. You're out there. We're going to help you find each other. People can also email me if they want at my work email, which I guess you can find me through redrocks.edu/English. Although I'm on the page as Sandra McCrae Scheibel, looks like Sajbel, that's my last name, which is why I don't publish under it because no one can pronounce it. We always have free events for the community. Like we had Bobby Lefebvre read, he's the new Colorado Poet Laureate. We had Joseph Hutchison, the former Poet Laureate, read. And we often do a lot of venues with really well-written, well-published writers. So just trying to keep the door open so everyone can come to the table and start practicing their craft with like-minded spirits.
And it's just one. And you have a beautiful website, which is the name of it is not the ordinary, like yourname.com, right?
Yeah, my web address is www.wordsruntogether.com. And I came up with that name because you know how most website addresses are a bunch of words run together?
Yeah.
You just smash them together. So it's wordsruntogether.com is my website.
Nice. All right. And all right, you're inspiring me.
Oh, I can't wait to see what you come up with.
I can't.
You'll have to send me stuff.
I just might. Yeah. I just, thinking about, like you were saying back when you look back in your childhood and, where I come from, and then even just outdoors and you write about the coyote and I'm picturing these little chipmunks that I'm like eating all my little flowers and digging up my tulip bulbs.
How dare they,
and they're too little to, like this. Oh, there you go. Yeah, it'd be hilarious there.
Yeah, you'll have some fun with that one.
Yeah, all right. So wordsruntogether.com.
Yes, that's it.
All right. Oh, this has been a delight. Thank you so much for coming in, Sandra. Oh,
thanks so much for having me. It's been really fun.
All right. So you want to check her out there, wordsruntogether.com, Sandra S. McRae. Okay. And find her work. And the name of your latest work is?
All the Way to Just About There.
All the Way to Just About There. Story of my life, too.
You know the feeling.
Totally. I'm still not there. All right. That's all good. All right. Hey, everyone. This has been Jerry Fabianica, KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9. And just been visiting here on Writer's Talk with poet Sandra S. McRae. And hopefully you found this delightful. Check out her website, okay? And get down to some of her workshops there at Red Rocks Community College.
Correct.
You're right on. Okay. And we'll be back another time now. Take care. Bye.